Could you get me a glass of water while you're over there? We're off the record.
The water boy.
Thank you. This will now come to order. It's 3:20 on Friday, March 19th. With us, we have Representative Lynn, Representative T. Wilson, Representative Book, and myself, Chair Olson. We have two people on excused absence and I believe one in transit to the committee. First item on the agenda today is House Bill 282. Kendra, would you join us? Where we left off at the last meeting was public testimony. Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill that hasn't testified already? Seeing none, is there anybody online? There's nobody online, so I think with that, we'll close out public testimony and take a brief at ease while we wait for the fifth member of the committee. We've been joined by Representative Lindsay Holmes, so we now have five committee members, and for the sake of Ms. Holmes, we've closed out public testimony, and we're getting ready if somebody would make a motion to adopt the CS for purposes of discussion, I will object.
Make that motion.
I object.
it's fair enough.
More specific on what we're adopting.
Adopting CS for House Bill 282 / C as a working document.
And Kendra will walk us through the changes. Welcome back.
Thank you. For the record, Kendra Kloster, staff to Representative Kathy Munoz. We have version C in front of us, and I'll walk you through the changes that we had worked on over the last couple days. First off, the board, we have changed from five members to seven. The two additional board members that we have added is a licensed physician and a hospital administrator. And also on that, on page two, you're going to see section three, which is line 14 through 16. That is the sunset for the board on June 30th, 2015, which is a normal sunset of 5 years. Page three, by changing the board to seven members, we, on line five, page three, we said that four members of the board need to be available for a quorum. One of the big changes that we made there is under section 845.005, duties of the board, which is on page three. We originally had a two-tier prescription endorsement, and the changes...
Representative Booth?
No, when she gets through with this explanation on this section, I have a question.
Okay. So the two-tier endorsement we removed, and we have replaced the ability for naturopathics to prescribe non-controlled legend drugs, and by that we have taken out their ability to prescribe the Schedule 1 through 6 drugs, which are in Alaska law and federal law, so they can only prescribe medications such as antibiotics that are non-addictive in nature. Under this, we have also added on line 25 through 26, per the request of the Pharmacists Association, is language as including regulations that define a physician-patient relationship, and there we're just saying that naturopaths can prescribe for only a physician-patient relationship, and that regulation will be adopted by the board.
Representative Book.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On line 19, where it goes from or number 5, Roman number 5, controlled substance under federal law may not be included on the list, is somewhat confusing to me. And I understand the intent. I understand that that's to be excluded.
Mm-hmm.
But we're establishing a list, and the way that this is written, you're going schedule 1, 2, 3, 4, or...
It's because we have two lists. One's the state list and one's the
I know, this
DEA.
Is the federal list, but I'm just talking about the language, to me, is a bit imprecise, I guess. If I don't disagree with the intent, I just disagree with the language. Is there a way to rephrase that to say the same thing that makes it clear that you're excluding five? Because you have an or before the ORA schedule, or, and so just that comma there at, between Roman numeral four and the four, and the or, to me, doesn't give it the clarity that I think that you're intending to do, that you're excluding that from the list.
Representative Holmes, as counsel to the Labor and Commerce Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand what Representative Book is trying to say, I think, on both lines 18 and 19. He's afraid that they're going to be read to say either schedules 1 through 4 or schedule 5 instead of, you know, all of them inclusively. Is that, am I understanding your concern?
Yeah, because we've got a couple of ORs in there, and it doesn't dedicate to me that number 5 is excluded from this list. Because of the language there, and that it's, you know, descriptively, decisively removed. This is the one thing that we're removing by establishing the conditions for this list. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's
if
my
we put the comma after 4, would that do it? On line 19?
No, I think
after Roman numeral 4?
If we remove the or there and say five controlled substances on this may not be included, it would the or is what's causing me confusion.
How about okay, and?
Mr. Chairman, may I make a suggestion?
Right.
Representative Holmes.
I don't want to make a motion yet. I just want to make a suggestion. On lines 18 and 19, that possibly if we were to rewrite it to get rid of the starting after the semicolon, you get rid of the letter A there, and you say schedule 1A, 2A, 3A, 4A, 5A, and 6A controlled substances under state law, or schedule 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 controlled substances under federal law may not be included on the list?
No.
Or you
no,
want
no.
to put and there too?
No. The only thing that's excluded here is number 5 on the federal list. That's the only thing that we're intending to exclude. Is
no,
that
that's
correct?
No, that's not. 1 through 5.
1 through 5.
We're intending to exclude, Mr. Chairman, if I understand, all of those named, all of those designated letters.
That's correct.
Yeah, that was, it reads the intent.
I
spent an hour with the both the sponsors.
And I think it's probably.
Kendra probably spent more time on it than we did with the attorneys. But
yeah, so it does remove all the schedules.
So all of the
they
four,
are.
All of the four. Okay, all of them. Okay,
all of the controls.
I get that now.
Yes.
Because
so that's probably
through the chair to the chair, the conversation that we had was that specifically under federal law, we know that number 5 is the one that's the most comprehensive as far as the not hallucinogens, but narcotics and whatever. So that was my confusion. I'm just trying to get clarity here, and if there is clarity here, then I remove any kind of objection or reference to clarity. So it's just me and my foggy old plumber head not working.
Representative Wilson.
I have a question on 25 and 26. The including the regulations that define the physician-patient relationship. I guess I don't know what you're trying to accomplish right there.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, what we're doing there is in order for a naturopath to prescribe medication, they must have a physician-patient relationship. They must. It's only to the patient that they can give a prescription to. We're just clarifying that.
It wouldn't be over the phone. Somebody calls up. Yeah, I'm looking for.
They need to make sure that they have an established.
There'd be somebody that they've actually seen. Somebody that was a.
I guess I just thought that was a no-brainer. You couldn't do that unless you had the relationship.
Okay. It was per the request. They're a pharmacist, and it was language that we had used from another statute for the optometrist, and they felt more comfortable for putting this language in, and we agreed and went ahead and put that in.
Thank you,
Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And on that same point, where does it say that they may only prescribe drugs to people where they have a physician-patient relationship?
There's a reference there on page through the Representative Holmes through the chair. We have that on page 25, 26, but then we also have it's going to be again in the bill. Let me show you. Page 3, and then also page 5, lines 16 through 18.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just closing that loop. Okay.
Please continue, Kendra. I think we're almost out of the changes, aren't we?
Yeah, you brought up my next one, Representative Holmes, and I think, yeah, I think that addresses all of them. And, I mean, the few other little changes that we went through was changes removing words throughout there, like page 5, line 5 of the old bill, referring to controlled substances, so just matching up language from when we took out the two-tier endorsement. But on that, that's all the changes to the bill.
Well, I'll lift my objection. Is there any further objection? And bring the CS back to the full committee for discussion. Any further questions for Kendra? Representative Lynn?
You told me that there are approximately 40 naturopaths within the state of Alaska who practice.
Representative, through the chair, that's correct.
Okay. And so we've got, what, a 7-member board. So we got 7 people administering only 40.
That's correct.
What, are there any other boards of 7 members that would watch over so few?
Through the chair, Representative Lynn, I'm not sure of all the setups of the boards. I know I'm pretty sure it's standard between 5 and 7. When we had a meeting about this with some other committee members, it was a kind of a compromise, something that we had worked out on adding a couple members to the board, because they were looking at adding a physician and also a hospital administrator.
Well, it just seems to me like we got this board and there's so few people that they really supervise out of 650,000.
Yes, and it will be more than likely be increasing the fiscal note there if this version is adopted, and we'll see that there in the next committee.
Thank you.
And I think a portion of the intent is we should be able to get more naturopaths into the state, I think, is one of the overriding intents of the legislation. Am I correct, Doctor?
Yep. Who would like that?
Representative Wilson.
And thank you, Chair. I guess I'm back to that same those same lines, because one of the complaints I've heard from some of the doctors is being stated as physician instead of put the naturopathic in front of that. Should that be in front of the physician patient, just that terminology?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, let me find where that page is. But what we did is in the bill, they should have, you can use a physician in the title, however, you have to have the term naturopath in conjunction with the term physician, so you can be called a naturopathic physician. And this is what we did. We're lining up with the U.S. Department of Labor. They had changed their definition, so we were just lining it up. But yes, they must use the term naturopath in conjunction with the term physician.
Follow-up?
Mm-hmm.
I guess all I'm saying is, like on line 25, that we should just have that one word added.
Sorry, so what page are you on?
Page 3, line 25 and 26. You know, it's just because we're using that physician word without putting the naturopathic in front of it. And I didn't, I mean, maybe it's redundant. I don't know. It's just one of the, right here. Because I keep hearing that, and I don't have a problem what they call it. It's not my personal problem. You know, I would just wanted to keep it consistent. It seems like you're telling me that it needs to be put in there when you're describing it or putting it out there. And I'm just wondering if people are reading this, then they would say they were in the category of physicians, as in what the doctors are saying they don't want. I don't know, just putting it out there. I'm not going to stop the bill because I'll just right. Have you think about it.
On that point?
Yeah, on that point. The testimony that I heard on this was that the pharmacists are the ones that are saying, look, we don't want to have to be the ones that verify that this patient is already been prescribed this drug, because we get a phone call at 11 o'clock at night and we have to write a script. So they're the ones that say it's on the doctor to provide that relationship, that we don't have to go there and you know, open up our store, go in there, and then try to verify that this patient actually has, there's no problem with this patient receiving these pharmacy regulated medications. So they wanted to establish that you know, they didn't have to provide the proof that what they were doing was legal and the right thing to do for the patient, because the patients, what happens is they get phone calls, doctors get phone calls all the time saying, hey, I'm your patient, and, you know, my tooth is now uncontrolled, I can't sleep, I have a big appointment tomorrow, and I need some medications right now, will you call up the pharmacy and write a script for me? And so then the guy shows up with this, says the doctor called in and said it's okay for me to get this script. They go over there and they look at their phone call log, and sure enough, they did. But they don't know if there's a relationship there. They don't know if there's anything that's on the books already that allows this patient to have this medication. And so they have to go and verify that. They got to look through their records. They got to look for their contacts. They have a list of it, but it's a really long it's not easy to do, and it takes them a lot of time. And so it puts the onus on them, and this way it's back on the docs. So that's.
I think I might be able to clear up some of the smoke if we go up to line 13.
That was my question.
What we're doing in line 27 is going to be done by the board. The board is going to define a patient or physician-patient relationship as one of their first tasks. Representative Wilson.
My question is not that complicated. I'm just referring to some of the complaints that I have had, the emails I have. It's just wanting to make sure that we are, it's just terminology. I understand what this section is doing, but from the hospitals and some of the clinics I have heard from, I guess they just want to make sure in the bill that we're distinguishing between a physician and a naturopathic physician. It's just a terminology. That's it. Not any more complicated.
We're sorry. All circuits are busy now. Will you please try your call again later? This is a recording.
Wait for these. Representative Wilson.
All I was trying to do is just try to keep it consistent. I know we're talking about a relationship between the doctor and between the patient, and some of the complaints I have found is that some of the other kinds of doctors want to make sure that we're aware, and so is the bill, that there's a different terminology. And I don't think it changes the bill, and if it's not in there, I'm not going to have heartburn over it. I just wanted to bring up their concern.
Okay, and one quick thing, Representative Wilson, through the chair. Page 7 at the top, lines 1 through 3, really do address that in the bill. So it's saying that you have to use the word naturopathy or naturopathic in the title. So I think that part of the bill will address that concern.
Are you on HESP by chance?
Yes. Talking to hear it again.
You get an extra shot at it.
Thank you.
Is there a fiscal note on here someplace?
Pardon me?
A fiscal note somewhere.
It moves on the first...
Yep.
First draft.
Can't find it.
I believe I have it here. It's the same.
Okay.
We actually have two fiscal notes.
Has this been amended or anything? Do you know, Conrad?
No, this is this is from the original.
2510?
Yeah.
Okay.
32,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this bill has three more hurdles, being HESS, judiciary, and finance. So.
For the correction, judiciary referral has been removed.
So, two more. What are the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move CS for House Bill number 282-26-LS-1208/C with accompanying fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
Object, just for 30 seconds.
Sure. Representative Wilson.
Just to put it on there, we did receive an objection to this bill just before the committee. And we are working with them. So I just wanted to let them know that we are going to get here in HESS again and let it move on, but that we are trying to address their concerns at this point. And with that, I'll remove my objection.
Thank you. Are there any further objections? Seeing none, the bill will move on to the next committee, and we'll take a brief at ease to complete the paperwork. We're back. Second item on the agenda will be House Bill 383, Transfers of Certain DNR Duties to DCCED. Carrying bill is Representative Rammers and his able staff.
Yeah, Margaret Dowling has done a terrific job. Mr. Chairman, my name is Jay Rammers. I'm a representative for District 10. It's a pleasure to come before your committee and your members. I want to give you a brief introduction of to House Bill 383. And if you'll pardon me, Mr. Chairman, you know, there's always a question when somebody from the interior gets involved in a fishing issue, and there ought to be a question when somebody from the interior gets involved in a agricultural issue. In this case, Mr. Chair, I want to share with you that I am very passionate about agriculture. I love agriculture. I have a commercial greenhouse. We grew over 5,000 pounds of tomatoes last year. We employ well over a dozen kids that are all from the Future Farmers of America. We spent $25,000 on payroll for them. I've had 35 members of the Alaska legislature over to see my hydroponic growing operation. I have had meetings between the School of Agriculture to get scientists and professors who have gone and visited Barrow, where I have working for the last several years, to create a commercial growing operation up there to teach young kids who have problems with juvenile diabetes and getting balanced nutrition to try and grow tomatoes and lettuce and cucumbers and other products up there. And I continue to work with North Slope Borough, with Mayor Itta, with the school district, with Arctic Slope Regional Corporation. I've taken tours of the Mat-Su Valley. I've done a fair amount of work with the Made in Alaska and Alaska Grown groups. So I'm very passionate about this issue and am mindful of where the Division of Ag sits inside of the Department of Natural Resources. Mr. Chairman, the Department of Natural Resources, along with the Department of Revenue, is responsible for the wages of everybody in this room, the lights, the witness table that where I offer my testimony, the carpet in here, every remodel. 90% of our state's revenue comes from the general fund. Our secretary, everything that we do touch within the state is generated from our handling of oil and hopefully our agile handling of gas and other hydrocarbons as we go into the next couple of decades for Alaska. And as such, DNR appropriately focuses most of its assets on oil and gas development. And the Division of Agriculture, which is within the Department of Natural Resources, I believe would benefit more from being in the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. Margaret Dowling and I had an excellent conversation with Commissioner Emil Nadi a couple of days ago, and his ledge liaison, Tyson, will be testifying shortly. This is not new, talking about the Division of Ag. When Margaret was doing research and she talked to the Sig Restad, who was the Division of Agriculture director from 1962 to 1968, which was 40 years ago, and we described the Division of Ag as the poor stepchild of DNR, he said that feeling isn't new. He, too, experienced the feeling at DNR. In fact, he said even after statehood, when the Department of Agriculture became a division, DNR's focus at that time was on mining and statehood selection of lands, not on agriculture. And ag would do better if it was its own department as it was before statehood. Even now, the Alaska Farm Bureau has it, one of their annual resolutions is for the Division of Agriculture to become a cabinet-level position. I am not advocating for that. In fact, what we're advocating for is that it would thrive over at the Department of Commerce and Economic Development that handles many revolving loan funds, many small businesses. I'm interested in commercial food production, but there also is a lot of commerce that happens in our farmers markets across the state. And there are a lot of opportunities, we think, to grow that relationship between farmers and ranchers and the people that they would be able to sell directly to. Mr. Chairman, I'll direct this to Representative Wilson, who was one of the predecessors of her seat. 1997, 13 years ago, Representative Jeanette James introduced a House Bill 228, a bill that created the Board of Agriculture and Conservation. And on that record, some of the minutes that we lifted from Barbara Cotting, who many of us know from her long tenure in this building, she said, she was reading into the record, "I submitted this bill in response to numerous requests from members of the agricultural industry in Alaska. It restructures the way state agricultural services will function in our state, making them more responsive to the industry's needs and more in touch with the grassroots operations of our producing farmers. Alaska needs to encourage agricultural development. We need to remove roadblocks and allow the industry to grow and prosper for the benefit of our state and all its citizens. This bill is just a starting point, and we plan to expand the duties and authorities." I come before you with the same mission. I just think that the Division of Ag can be better served, and I think we have a nice opportunity to hear from the farm community about how the Division of Agriculture may be able to breathe better and execute its mission if it were in a department where, as a boutique part of a larger entity, it's just not getting the sunshine that all living departments need. There have been a lot of rumors that have been circulated, unfortunately, this week, and just to set those that may be listening at ease, Mr. Chairman, let me tell you what this bill does not do. It does not dismantle the division. It does not cut any division jobs. It does not close any division offices, particularly those in the Mat Valley, which is the Green Belt of Alaska, which I've toured, and I'm very proud of the acreage that we have under cultivation there. It does not change the structure of the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund or the BAC. What this bill does do is it lifts the Division of Agriculture intact, and it moves it out of DNR into the Commerce and Economic Development, and does nothing more than that. The budget remains the same. The Revolving Loan Fund and the BAC remain the same. The mission remains the same. The employees and the offices remain the same. The public's access remains the same. The bill simply changes the statutory language to replace the Department of Natural Resources with the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. And I think that when you hear the mission statement of the Commerce and Economic Development, you'll recognize that it may be just as good a fit over in that department as it is in the Department of Natural Resources. It's been a very lively conversation so far. Some have said that maybe it ought to be the Department of Oil and Gas, and everything else should be lifted and moved elsewhere so that we can focus more on mines, mining land and water, as well as the Division of Agriculture. But that's a bill for somebody to offer in the 27th legislature. In this case, I wanted to stimulate an excellent dialogue and conversation with the farming community, and that would conclude my testimony. And finally, Mr. Chairman, what I would bring to your attention is that Mr. Bernie Carl, who has signed up to testify today, has been named Alaska or Fairbanks Businessman of the Year, and he's enjoying that award this evening. And if he's still online to testify, if we could, whatever accommodates your protocol, take 3 minutes of testimony from Bernie so he can get over by 4:30 or 5 to this event as it begins, because it's a really a lifelong distinction for him. He's remarkable and remarkably loud and generally remarkably right and remarkably ahead of many of us. He's been a mentor for me in working with these FFA kids, working with the University of Alaska School of Agriculture, and in learning about hydroponics and beginning to try to export that to areas where they can't otherwise grow food. He's quite an inspiration. So if it is accommodating to the chairman, we'd love to take his testimony and then get you back on track. And I thank you very much. And after you make that decision, I'd be available to answer questions.
Actually, we're having some technical problems at this point in time. So who's going to be doing the sectional, Margaret?
Yes, sir.
Question?
I do have a question for the sponsor, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for bringing this forward. I'm curious as to why we're going to shift responsibilities, but that's for discussion. In the proposal here, I noticed that elk in particular is singled out. In this state, we have buffalo, muskox, reindeer, yak, cattle, all being produced in different other places around the state with opportunities for them and here you have singled out elk. I noticed in testimony on in finance that a gentleman from Kodiak was looking to combine a couple of these species and come up with a Cadillac. So I was just wondering why in particular that you have addressed in Section 5, Page 3, elk in particular.
I don't know. Through the chair, I don't know.
Well, I'd like to have that question.
Come on up, Margaret. Pull chair up.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Margaret Delling. I'm staff to Representative Bramrus, District 10. And actually, there's no change to Title III. What this bill does is it literally went through and it took wherever Department of Natural Resources was located in the statute, lifted that out, and put in its place the Department of Commerce. So it's interesting because we have heard from people who say, gee, I didn't know that the plant materials facility was supposed to be in regular communication with the university. Is that something new? And no, it's not. There were no substantive changes made to the statute at all.
Follow up?
That's my final answer, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, they're sticking to it, right?
Through the chair, as long as we're making some adjustments, was there any attempts other than what is in this throughout the course of conversations to change any of the sections and make some adjustments?
No.
Okay.
Chair.
Through the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you for bringing this. I do think agriculture needs a lot more attention. There's a lot out there that I think people are now starting to hear about. I don't know whether this is the appropriate place or not, but there's been a lot of things on the regulation of cheese lately. Would those regulations and those types of issues possibly be able to go over to this division as well?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, DEC regulates entirely different subject matter than agriculture, and I'm sensitive to those issues. But this late into the session, we're really interested in stimulating conversation, and hope that it leads to some positive steps, like creating an agricultural caucus that can talk about precisely these issues and how we can address these things as we go into the interim.
Perfect. And one more question.
Follow up.
First, I had to try. Just had to go somewhere else. My understanding is there is an agricultural loan program of revolving one of about $40 million. Would that also be put in over here?
Yes, for the record, again, this is Margaret Dowling, and through the chair, Representative Wilson, there are no changes to the structure of the revolving loan fund or to the balance, or there are no changes to it at all. Again, all this bill does is it lifts up the division, keeps it absolutely intact. There's no change to the board structure, the memberships, the positions, everything remains the same. It just lifts it up, puts it over in a different department.
Follow up? I might have asked it wrong. So it does go over here. I just wanted to make sure that loan program would go here. That's just what I just wanted to make sure.
Yes, exactly. Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that's exactly what happens.
The programs that they manage, that DC manages, don't they manage?
Through the chair, a question coming from Representative Ramirez is, are there other programs that the Division of Agriculture manages? And the answer to that is yes. There's the plant materials facility. There's Alaska Grown, branding. There's several different features to the department that the division oversees, and those all remain the same. And they go with the division. Basically, it's everything in Title III, all the programs, everything under the rubric of the division are lifted from the Department of Natural Resources and put right over into the Department of Commerce.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I've been told we think we have our communications running. I think we can probably accommodate Bernie Carl now. Do we have Fairbanks on?
Yes. Can you hear us?
Yeah, you're coming through fine. Could you please state your name and affiliation for the record?
Yeah, Bernie Carl, Chena Fresh up at Chena Hot Springs. And Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak on a very important piece of legislation, House Bill 383. I sit as president of the Farm Bureau here for the Fairbanks chapter, and number six of 16 children from a farm family. So farming and growing food is a very important part of my life and should be of all of our lives. I believe that House Bill 383 should pass on and move on for the main reason that agriculture has always been the ugly stepchild, redheaded ugly stepchild. And once again, I want to echo the Representative Ramirez's kind words for both for agriculture, because he was saying that this is not placing anything, we're not placing any bad feelings towards the Division of Ag in Natural Resources. I personally am involved with agriculture and involved with Division of Ag, and I believe that the director that we have, Francie Havemeister, has done a tremendous job with the deck of cards that she has, the hand she's been dealt. They have a budget of about $4 million for a landmass that is one-third the size of the continental United States. So we only grow 2% of what we eat. Every civilization that's gotten away from agronomy has failed. So we are very close to failure. America did not grow enough food to feed itself in 2005 for the first time in our history since 1776. And I can assure you that last year we imported 40% of our food into America from countries where there's no labor laws, there's no environmental laws, and there's no import duty on food. Alaska, of all places, should lead this parade. We should lead the parade in food security for ourselves, for your families, for your children, for your grandchildren. We should lead this parade. We should be the breadbasket. We have the ability to be the breadbasket. We have the brightest and the best that live in this state. We need to use our resources responsibly. I think that agriculture has gone backwards. I do not see it going forward. I only see it going backwards. Obviously, oil is important and gas is important, so it's always going to take the back seat. I believe that if you move this to commerce and economic development, commerce, community, and economic development, it will be a star, a shining star. And for sure, it can't do any harm. Let's just say, for instance, you moved it. What is the downside risk? Zero. It can only be positive. There can be no negative here. I mean, so it seems to me that you have to weigh the positive and the negatives. We know now that we only grow 2% of what we eat. I would venture to say that Alaska has a lot to market. We have land. We have good growing season. We have some of the smartest and brightest people in the world up at the university. China presently has two greenhouses going. We didn't know how to do that. We got the knowledge from the University of Alaska. I can tell you that Dr. Miriam Carlson and Jeff Warner, her research assistant, they're not good.
Great.
They're great. The difference between good and great is 5%. They put the extra 5% of effort in. Constantly at minus 50, minus 60 below zero, we are growing food and lots of it. We are now embarking on putting a one-acre greenhouse in. I'm telling you, the brightest and best times are ahead for Alaska. But it's not as business as usual. We need to reinvent ourselves. We need to think to the future. And I don't know if this has anything to do with it, but if any of you have any influence down there, the state needs to bite the bullet and build the bullet line. Because it is so important for the future of Alaska. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. Any questions for Bernie? And again, congratulations on your award tonight. And seeing no questions, Jeff Werner, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Please state your name and affiliation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jeff Werner, and I'm the state director of the Alaska Future Farmers of America here in Alaska. And the Alaska Future Farmers, I've been involved in agriculture for myself for the past 30 years, being raised in Palmer and now working and living in Fairbanks. And Alaska statewide has an opportunity to provide the resources to feed our state. We can't do it all, but we can definitely do what we can, as well as providing the materials to process milk and also feed our livestock for that industry. But and the FFA members throughout Alaska, we believe that we are the future of Alaska, and it's our responsibility to develop and educate ourselves for the talents necessary to be gainfully employed in the many industries necessary to feed, fuel, and finance Alaska. From the oceans to the mountains, Alaska has 365 million acres of valuable resources able to provide a stable food supply for our families and the revenues to develop prosperous and equitable communities. Alaska, however, doesn't have the currently have the adequate programs to teach our young people or to help market and develop those economic centers in our local communities, and that's something else I'm also involved in. We need a progressive agricultural industry to provide even the basic needs for every community throughout Alaska. You know, we often talk about Delta Junction, Point McKenzie, the Kenai Peninsula, the Manuska Valley, and even the Tanana, and here in Fairbanks and the Tanana Valley, but we often neglect to think about the Ruby, Galena, Aniak, Anvik, Bethel, Nome, Kotzebue, even Barrow, as Representative Ramirez has mentioned. All those communities can and should be producing something on their ground to feed their local communities instead of shipping it in either in the can or a frozen package. And it's a shame that in Alaska, we have the ability, but we can't move forward under this current administration as it is within the Department of Natural Resources. If it was possible, we should have and would have been doing such. In the 30 years growing up as a young person in Palmer and working here in Fairbanks, what my opportunities in agriculture exist currently at the university and with the help of Mr. Carl and Representative Ramirez. But if I was like many of my friends and young FFA members that want to be a future of Alaska's agricultural fabric, the economic situation is grim. The opportunities to develop a culture for an agriculture in the agriculture are few and far between. It's kind of almost discouraging. You know, Francie Havemeister, Director of Division of Agriculture, has been very supportive of the FFA and our activities in education throughout the state, and we really do appreciate what the Division of Agriculture has done and is doing, but how do we take it to the next step and make it a viable economic resource for Alaska? I know currently there's a great interest in providing jobs, and working currently with the Department of Labor and Department of Education, trying to find ways to teach our young people about jobs. But honestly, agriculture is one of the largest employers nationwide, and in Alaska is one of the fewest employers that we have, employs the fewest number of young people, because they don't understand that agriculture, the food on your table is a result of your labors. And as many of you probably remember your parents telling you, no work, no eat, well, that still stands true in Alaska, regardless of our incomes or the opportunities we have to bring our food from out of state. At the same time, Alaska has a very vulnerable three-day food supply on our shelves. If we don't do something almost immediately to start growing something this summer, throughout the summer, that we can store in our freezers and our pantries for the winter, it's going to be a very cold and hungry winter coming on. And it's, as in the FFA and the young people that I work with, we go to bed at night worrying about that. But then when we wake up in the morning, what's the opportunity for us the next day? And with that, we support the move of the Division of Agriculture and going from the Department of Natural Resources to the Department of Commerce and Community Economic Development. And I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Any questions for Jeff? Thanks again, Jeff. I think we're going to come back into the room now. I see Tyson sitting back there who has signed up, so... thanks again, Representative Ramirez and Margaret. You going to be available for more questions?
Yes, sir.
All right. So nice to be here. For the record,
welcome back.
Thank you. For the record, Tyson Fick, Legislative Liaison, Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. Well, thank you for having me. Now, although this bill proposes to simply lift the Division of Agriculture as a unit from Natural Resources and place it under the direction of the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, With the passage of HB 383, there would be a number of technical issues to work out with such a move that the department would certainly prefer to have some time to work through what such a major change would mean to all parties involved. The mission of DNR is to develop, conserve, and enhance natural resources for present and future Alaskans, while the mission at DCCED is promoting a healthy economy and strong communities. What this proposed change would mean to a division with the mission to promote and encourage development of an agriculture industry in the state is not entirely clear without further discussion. Now, DCC and DNR currently work together in a number of areas, such as coastal zone management, coastal impact assessment assistance program grants, and in the event of annexations or ANCSA land claims, the staff at the Division of Community and Regional Affairs often work with the people at DNR and in local communities throughout the state. In these cases, our relationship has benefited from clear definitions of roles and responsibilities of our respective agencies. We certainly welcome greater interdepartmental coordination, and we feel we have a lot to offer with our knowledgeable and talented folks in the Office of Economic Development, which have industry advocates in mining, fisheries, tourism, timber, the recently revitalized film office. We also see great values in the efforts of the Alaska Grown Farm Products Marketing Program and potential for synergies with the state's other marketing programs affiliated with DCCED, such as ASME, ATIA, and Made in Alaska. The department also believes that much of this could be achieved without a wholesale move of the division. DCCED has extensive experience in managing loan funds, such as the Ag Revolving Loan Fund, administered by a Division of Investments, such as Commercial Fishing Revolving Loan Fund, Rural Development Initiative Fund, Small Business Economic Development Program, and there's legislation currently pending that we've heard in this committee with microloans, as well as some energy conservation loans for small businesses and a number of other things going on. We also have a lot of experience in federal and state grant programs and work closely with USDA Rural Development and the Denali Commission on projects throughout the state. However, there would be admittedly a number of odd-fitting portions of the Division of Ag within DCCED, namely the Plant Materials Research Center out in the Butte and the McKinley Meat Plant, for example. The Plant Materials Research Center grows native grass seed for revegetation projects and runs a full-scale research farm. In many states, this would be a function of a university system. And the meat plant is managed by DNR personnel, but the meat is processed by guests of our corrections facilities. So no matter how this works out, we look forward to working closer with the good folks over at the Division of Agriculture and thank the sponsor for highlighting the importance and potential for the agriculture industry in Alaska. Thank you.
Representative Holmes, followed by Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have two questions. First, do either the department or the administration have a position on the bill?
We feel that this, through the chair, Representative Holmes, we feel this is a policy discussion for the legislature. We do not have a position either way.
Okay. And second question, Mr. Chairman, on the fiscal notes, we have one from, not surprisingly, from DNR and one from DCCED, which appear, in my reading, just to simply take the budget of one and move it to the other.
Through the chair, that is correct. We went in at the RDU level, in budget terms, mm-hmm. decremented from DNR's budget the entirety of the operating and equipment for the ag division and put it into DCCED. That doesn't, in the language of the fiscal note, you see there's some discussion of the facilities owned and that kind of thing. It wasn't addressed at this time.
Mr. Chairman, if I may follow up, I'm assuming that were this bill to pass, there would be some other types of costs involved, one-time costs. You got to reprint all the stationery. You got to redo websites. You got to redo nameplates. You got to redo things like that. Is that any of that contemplated in the bill or in the fiscal note?
Through the chair, Representative Holmes, that has not been fully fleshed out at this time.
That
that's one of the things that we might want a little more time to work on should such a thing happen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Frick. Could you again tell me what the mission is of DNR?
DNR's mission is to develop, conserve, and enhance natural resources for present and future Alaskans.
Follow-up?
Follow-up.
Okay, and you said yours was a healthy economy and to promote development.
Well, promoting a healthy economy and strong communities.
Okay, that's close. Personally, by reading these two, it seems to me that agriculture would fit better within your division because we're not conserving anything. We're actually looking at growing and having a business and being able to promote that with the Alaskan grown. I guess my question was, do you think that they're getting the attention that's necessary in DNR with as big as it is?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, I can't really say what's going on in DNR. I work for DCCED, and that would be a comment for DNR.
Okay. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
I guess I'm going to go kind of where Bernie was going. If it doesn't work, you could always give it back. Is that not true? Sorry, we're North Pole. Just straight to the point.
Through the chair, the legislature could always give it back.
That still works for me. Thank you.
Any further questions? Any further questions for Tyson? Thanks again.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else in the room who would care to testify on this bill before we go out of the building? Pete?
I could.
No.
Come on up.
Please join us. Just take your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Pete Feldman, and I work for Representative John Harris, but I guess I'm testifying on my own behalf and maybe as a farmer?
As a farmer,
excuse me, and a voice for agriculture. Golly, where do I start? I didn't really prepare anything. You know, I have a lot of passion about agriculture. I came up to Alaska in order to be a farmer. And when I came, it was probably at the point where agriculture was at its lowest point. It was 1987. There was land for sale everywhere. There was farms closing everywhere. And, of course, the word was is that you can't farm in Alaska. And, you know, it was trying to frame my thoughts here. You know, all you heard was is about the failures that were taking place in agriculture. It was all over the paper. It was everywhere. It was about the families that were being broken, the land that was cleared that couldn't be farmed, and all the wasted money. And so I got to looking around a little bit, and there was a study done. It was a study called the Mega Projects of Alaska. And in that study, it quoted the amount of money that was spent on agriculture and all the other mega projects. But in that study, it said that there's $190 million spent on agriculture in the state of Alaska. So if you think about that, there's really been very little money spent on agriculture in the state of Alaska, and really very few losses, because a lot of that money was used to clear land, it was used to put in roads, it was used to put in power lines, and all those sorts of things that opened the land up so that we could farm it. The land's still there, some of it's being farmed, some of it isn't. And so there wasn't a lot of loss there. The problem we had was agriculture was micromanaged. We had DNR, or the Division of Ag, was telling people how big to build their barns, what kind of barns they could build, when they could, you know, what the number of cows they should be milking, and so on. And we had these bottlenecks. And the problem was is that agriculture is not something that you throw money at and expect it to grow into progress. You know, back in 1977, we were producing more beef, more chicken, more meat, more wool, more eggs, more hay crop than we are today. In 1977, according to USDA's numbers, we were outproducing then, you know, compared to what we are today. And so the question is what did we do wrong? We threw this money at it. We had land open up. We had willing farmers. And the fact is you can farm in Alaska. There's no doubt. You know, I mean, we've proven time and time again that you can produce in this state. And we have also proven that people will buy and purchase Alaskan products. There's no doubt. And so, but what's the problem? Problem boils down really to a couple of things. One is marketing is one of the problems. regulations is another one of the problems, and the way that our government has chosen to invest in agriculture. And so just talk about marketing real quick. We know we can produce, and we know that we can that the people will consume. Here's the thing about farmers. Farmers will farm until they die. That's because that's what they are. That's what they do. That's what makes them breathe every day. And people have to eat. And so the hang-up is in the marketing in the middle. And so is it wrong, you know, for the state of Alaska to maybe put a little bit of money into some infrastructure where you might have a flash freezing plant so that our people in Point McKenzie and Palmer can get some vegetables in the market? Is it wrong for us to invest in that? I would say no. You know, now why, you know, the farmers could rent the facility, they could use the facility, you know, to get into the market, solving that problem that we have of how do you get into the market. We put money into roads, we put money into fish hatcheries, we put money into schools. All of that's for the good of the people. Well, agriculture is for the good of the people. Regulations. You know, the deal with regulations is we don't need regulations that are going to inhibit people from producing. You know, there's been some discussion recently about regulations that have to do with basic things like food and water. You know, we don't need regulations that inhibit people. We need to have departments that work together that allow for regulations to be modified for our state. Who cares what they're doing in the lower 48? It doesn't matter what regulations they're using there. We don't export food out of our state. We should have our departments making regulations. DNR, DEC, and the Division of Ag should be working together with the farmers so we can open this up so that we don't have government intervention preventing us from farming. You know, if it was me, and like I said, I'm kind of shooting. I don't get it well. You know? Oh, sorry. if it was me and I was sitting atop, I'd be selling Alaska as the last stronghold of the family farm. We, in some ways, are 50 years behind, 60 years, maybe 100 years behind the lower 48, but that's to our advantage. We have a closed market. We have virgin soil. We have clean land. We have a clean environment. This is the place where we can sell Alaska as the last stronghold of the family farm. We should in some ways be going backward. We don't need corporate farming here. Corporate farming won't work. You know, we need to have family farms, and you start those by allowing, you know, the departments to work together and get the Division of Ag involved in things they can do, whether moving them to DCCD or not, and taking them out of DNR, I don't know all the answers to that one. I do know that I've been in this since 1987, and nothing has changed. We still have the same problems we had today as we had in 1987. So maybe it's time to make a dramatic move and see if we can kick this thing a little bit, spur the horse, and get it moving again. And maybe moving the division is what it takes. I don't know, but at least it's worth discussing.
We take a question? So how do you really feel, Pete?
Yeah, you know, once I get started, I can't quit.
First of all, I think he has the wrong job. You know, I think he should be the PR for agriculture. And we talked about this with the regulations. Do you think that currently, just being in DNR, that the agricultural community is getting what they need to be able to be more viable? Come on, you know you want to tell us.
I know I want to tell you. I really do. I've worked on some transition work. And I know that during that time, there were some statements that were made that really bothered me. And what was said was the questions that were asked is, why shouldn't we just let agriculture die? You know, and that was discussed. And so I know that at the higher levels that, you know, some people consider agriculture to be a thorn in their side. You know, there are some individuals within the system who really think that this is just something that we need to keep our hands off of. and we should just let them alone and let economics play its way out and just stay out of it. And so I think that we've been inhibited in a lot of ways. And, you know, you won't find any farmers asking for handouts, but, you know, you've got a situation where, and I don't like the word, you know, economy of scale, but because if you regulate somebody to the point where they have to invest $350,000 in a small milk facility, then, you know, the payback on that's a couple of $1,000 a month. You can't milk 20 cows or 10 goats or whatever it is and make that kind of payback. So if you regulate them to the point where they have to make that investment, you get yourself stuck in a cycle. So what happens is you have to have more cattle or farm more land or have more equipment. Then you have to have more hired help. So then you have to have more money. So, and it goes around and around. And that's what's broke a lot of farmers. For instance, when I got my land, it was all trees, 240 acres. There was thousands of acres all around me that could be farmed, and I was farming a lot of this land, but I had trees. The state said I had to clear my land in 5 years. And so instead of allowing me to farm available farmland, I had to go borrow $50,000 to clear land to meet their regulations. And so in order to do that, then I had to, of course, milk more cows, get hired help, buy bigger equipment, which then I had to get more cows, and it became a cycle. It was regulations that forced that. If we were allowed to build from the ground up, allowing for small people to have two or three or four cows or whatever and start allowing this to build the way it should, the market would be secure and we'd be able to sell our product and make our payments.
Follow up? I don't feel scared. Do you see any harm of making this transition?
Well, I guess we could always move it back if it doesn't work, right?
Well, thanks again, Pete.
Okay, thank you.
Francie Havemeister, are you online, Francie?
Yes, I am, sir.
Could you please state your name and affiliation for the record, and you have our undivided attention.
Okay, for the record, my name is Francie Havemeister. I'm the director for the Division of Agriculture. First, I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. I would like to thank the sponsor for introducing this bill so we can have this open and important discussion. I appreciate the sponsor's avid and productive interest in agriculture development in Alaska. We have talked several times about our common goals of promoting the abundant resources that sustain us and build our communities. Agriculture is my family's life. My husband's family has been actively involved with agriculture since 1935 when the colonists originally came to Palmer. I want to see my children and my grandchildren appreciate the opportunities that agriculture can provide and will bring to Alaska. There may be some benefits to leaving the division exactly how it is or openly examining any changes suggested, but these are policy calls beyond the purview of myself, the division director. These goals have been outlined in the division's 10-year plan, and I would like to highlight several that are in sync with the sponsor's expectations and desire to see growth and success in these goals for the division. I believe we are in full agreement in the value of furthering the division's goals. When I had met with Representative Brammer, he had asked if I could address five issues where I think that the agriculture community would benefit. And the division has put together, in cooperation with industry, with agency people, with some legislators, with private sector, and people who are just generally interested in agriculture, a long-term plan called Building a Sustainable Agriculture Industry. And we put it together last year. It is up for review coming up this spring. And it is just an overview of where the industry thinks that it would like assistance and where it would like to go. And those top areas that were addressed in this plan were increased marketing, which would include raising the awareness of Alaskan agriculture to Alaska consumers and educate consumers on health on the health benefits of locally grown food, also known as the Alaska Grown Program. As Pete Fellman mentioned, we are lacking infrastructure development, and the division has worked hard to partner with areas and grants that have areas that have sought grant opportunity. For example, the Mat-Su Valley looking for the processing center. outreach, education, and recruiting, like Jeff Warner addressed. We continue to partner with our agriculture youth education programs. I agree with Jeff, the young people of today are our leaders for tomorrow, and most children are at least two generations removed from the farm. The average age of Alaskan farmers is 57. It is imperative that our young people know that their food does not come from the grocery store and in saran wrap, and they gain the expertise needed to produce food for future generations. Continued support was also mentioned by industry as well as the Committee for the Plant Materials Center. It is the research and development arm of the Division of Ag, and its primary purpose of the PNC is production of high-quality feed. Another area of interest that was reiterated through the industry was the continued support of the Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund. This is a vital fund that provides many, many ag people the funds to do land development. It offers operating loans, and it is an important piece of the agriculture community. And I'd like to thank you again, the sponsor, for this opportunity to have this discussion.
Any questions for Francie? Thanks again. Paul Huppert, you were down for questions only, and yes, you'd like to make a statement.
Yes, I would. My name is Paul Huppert. I know a lot of you legislators, and I'm 100% in support of Representative Ramirez's legislation. I have been in the agriculture business in Alaska since the 50s. My family's involved. We have farming operation. We have warehouses and I own Palmer Produce, the Alaska Nugget brand that's sold in Alaska. We market to Safeway stores, Kroger Company, Walmart, wholesalers, and the military. I hear criticism of regulations. Well, regulations are something that the federal government's demanding and DEC's demanding, and there's not so much by the state. In fact, I wanted to make it real sure that when this is transferred, that the inspection service is done within the state. That is very critical. They're all demanding it, and we cannot market to those entities without being able to pass those inspections and supply wholesome food to them. We market for a lot of small growers. I hear criticisms of the fact there's no marketing for them. We are available. I market for growers that do produce nothing but maybe rhubarb and several thousand cases of head lettuce, cabbage, and several thousand tons of potatoes, and they're marketed on the market. We send to the rail belt area, to Fairbanks. We send to the Anchorage market and the Kenai market. We ship an awful lot of product, and it really kills me when we send out a 50-pound box of potatoes to St. Mary's or Kotzebue or one of those places, and they're paying as high as $22 just to freight to ship it there. But those people appreciate getting Alaska-grown products, and it's sold within the state. I started out and was a user of the Alaska Revolving Loan Fund. We paid back all our loans. We built several warehouses with those loan funds. We purchased land with those loan funds. We put in a vacuum cooling that is required to market on that Anchorage market and to all of those markets. We can take 150 cases of head lettuce as an example with a pulp temperature of 80 degrees. Put it in a vacuum cooler, and 15 minutes later have a pulp temperature of 34 degrees. And that's what's done in all the market that ships in here. We keep abreast of the market. That's a critical thing. We know what the marketing is doing through USDA in all the areas, and that's our competition. That plus the freight. I think that this Division of Agriculture has been a second cousin for a long, long time. I was involved with the Agricultural Action Council. I was involved with several committees on agriculture, and it was a stop-and-go process. I hear a lot of criticism as to why something failed, and I hear a lot of criticism to the money spent. Well, you know, I had a Japanese fellow tell me one time, when I was on the Ag Council, we can't make any long-range plans in Alaska, because he says you can't make long-range plans with short-range economic studies. He says you're looking for what you're going to need 30 years from now. And I think that's, as progress, that's exactly true. One of the things that, if this is transferred, I would hope that all agriculture classified lands would go with the Division of Agriculture. And that's where the marketing of those lands would go, and that they would become available and preserved for the future. It's critical that we preserve these agriculture classified lands. It's not important that we're going to use them this year or next year. If you want to preserve something for future generations, keep the lands that preserve food. Well, gentlemen, I would answer any questions, and I'm available for any other comment. Thank you.
Any questions for Paul? Thanks again, Paul. Al Poindexter, are you still with us, Al?
I sure am.
Well, haven't talked to you for a while. Welcome. Could you please state your name and affiliation for the record?
You scared him.
Al?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you please state your name and affiliation for the record, Al?
Oh, I'm technologically disadvantaged, so I was pushing the wrong button.
Oh, welcome to the club.
My name is Al Poindexter. I'm the owner of Anchor Point Greenhouse in Anchor Point, Alaska. I produce two potting soils that's shipped and used around the state. It's called Fishy Pete and Alaska Earth. I also grow a lot of bedding plants and grow produce as well. I have been a teacher for 20 years and have worked with the FFA for the past 20 years. I'll start from the beginning. I was born in Seward in 1948. I'm 62 years old now, and I've been involved with agriculture all my life, even while I was teaching. I think this move might help some. I really believe that we should have a Department of Oil and Gas, and that the Division of Agriculture should be its own cabinet position as well. But that being said, this move will hopefully help us out a little bit. I know that we have made requests to DNR for budget requests many times in the past and have been totally ignored. It has not gone forward any further than the desk in that office. So this might provide us a little bit of breathing room as well. Just moving the division over to another department is one thing, but I think this agriculture statute really needs some work. It was mentioned that only elk was singled out. There are lots of other things that probably ought to be addressed, including oysters and land. I think land, we have to always go to the Division of Lands to deal with agriculture land, and I think that ought to also be housed in the Division of Agriculture. I think the ARLF and the Board of Ag and Conservation needs to be addressed in this statute. At this point, I am on the Board of Ag and Conservation, and even though it has a nice title, our only authority is to accept or deny loan applications through ARLF. We have no other authority. And so I'm not really sure why we're called the Board of Ag and Conservation. It makes no sense to me. I would think that this board is interested in having some other authority or at least advisory capacity to the director of the Division of Agriculture. Soil conservation should also be part of this statute, because soil conservation actually is a part of agriculture more than it is anything else. And if it's left in DNR while the Division of Ag is moved one way and soil conservation is kept in another place, they have no opportunity to work together like they should. I think this statute also should provide for education. I know the Division of Agriculture and the folks in agriculture really support and promote agriculture education, including the FFA and 4-H. However, monetarily, there's almost nothing there. And the Department of Education basically does not support or promote agriculture education. So if we had some sort of an education part of the statute or some mandate that the Department of Education work with us in educating our youth about agriculture and hopefully providing impetus and opportunity for our youth to involve themselves with agriculture, not only for jobs, but also becoming entrepreneurs. And I think FFA has done a fairly good job with a small number of students up to this point. We have people coming out of the FFA program who are now landscapers. Some are environmental engineers. Some are actually growing potatoes and so forth. And we could have a lot more of those folks actually not only being entrepreneurs, but also providing jobs for others as well in this state. There's lots of opportunity, and nobody really realizes what those are unless we teach those kids. Let me see, what else? There's a lot of things I think this statute ought to address. One is land scholarships for folks who actually graduate from agricultural programs. If they do well, perhaps the state would like to give them a 10-acre parcel as a land scholarship, which would start small family farms. And there was some discussion earlier about what happened to our farms. I remember in the late 50s, early 60s, we operated a chicken farm in Seward with 17,000 chickens. The brand was Totem Eggs. We provided a large part of the state's population with eggs, fresh eggs. And we had dairies on the peninsula as well as in the Mad Valley and all the way up the rail belt, and actually out in the bush. Antioch, I believe, had a nice farm and so forth. What happened to those? I will tell you what happened to those. We, all of a sudden, discovered oil and gas and needed workers. Where do you get skilled workers locally that can do those kinds of jobs? Farmers. Farmers are plumbers. Farmers are electricians. Farmers are mechanics. And they have the impetus and the willpower to go do that kind of stuff. And obviously in the oil field, you're going to make about 10 times more money working in the oil field than you are on a farm. And so it siphoned off all of our best farmers into the oil and gas field. And since then, we have not educated, taught, or promoted or allowed future generations to move into those farming opportunities.
Al, could you wrap it up? We've got four more people that we're going to try to hear from this evening.
Absolutely. At any rate, I think the move is probably a good one, and I support it, and hopefully, if anybody has any questions, I'm here. Thanks.
Thanks again, Al. Bryce Wrigley, are you with us, Bryce?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, coming through good. Please state your name and affiliation.
I live in Delta Junction. I'm the Alaska Farm Bureau president. I appreciate the opportunity to speak. I appreciate also Representative Ramirez's work on this. A couple of weeks ago, when I was in Representative Ramirez's office, he made a comment that I think is significant. He said that ag needs sunlight to grow and flourish. And because agriculture at this point is in DNR, it's in the shadow of oil and gas, and it can't do that. And I think that's an apt description of the current status quo. For years, the ag community has felt that DNR is so occupied with oil and gas that they've not had time to adequately address the development of agriculture. The 10-year plan for agriculture laid out by Governor Hammond in the late 70s had as a goal to encourage economic development of renewable resources while there was oil resources to do that. That included, those renewable resources included agriculture, and the purposes was to broaden the state's economic base, to stabilize real food costs, to provide alternative job opportunities, and to improve rural life by developing new sources of food and economic activity. And I have to ask, would we be having this conversation if that plan had been allowed to proceed? I don't think that we would have. What happened in 1982, the plan was begun. In 1982, there was an early snow in Delta, the first of the large projects, and it caused about half of the crop to be lost. And the people in power decided, well, gosh, we can't do anything with agriculture in this state, and they threw the baby out with the bathwater. In reality, any place where food is grown, there are climatic challenges to deal with. If you're in Australia, you deal with drought. If you're in the Midwest, you deal with rain or hail. If you're in the South, you deal with frost. And no matter where food is grown, we have challenges to deal with. But in Alaska, we have not developed an ag culture. Everywhere else, agriculture was the basis of the civilization, except for in Alaska. And so we have not grown up with this idea that, well, if you have a bad year, you bow your head, you buckle down, and you plant again next year. And so support for development of agriculture died out in the early 80s. I support the bill for the following reasons. I think that we need, as a state, we need to establish feeding our citizens as a priority. And nobody above the director level at this point has the time to focus on agriculture, because all their time is taken up by other priorities. As a state, I think we need to be looking at feeding our citizens as that priority. Everybody knows, we talk often about our food security situation. One of these days, a disruption of the transportation system is going to occur, and food will get short, and it'll be too late to put the pieces in place to feed ourselves. We need to be doing that right now, and we cannot do it under the current structure. I asked several people today. I was in a conference, a SARE conference in Fairbanks, and a number of people asked me about this legislation. I told them basically what I've told you here. And the one question they had, would it be better than where we are now? And I said, what have you got right now? And if you look ahead 20 years, what will you have then? Based on the past 30 years, we can pretty much guess that we will have the same situation we've got right now. Ag will be scratching around trying to find what little crumbs are thrown to it. We will not have an ag industry capable of feeding ourselves. We will not have youth coming in to farm. And now is the time to put those pieces in place before we need them in place. I have a couple of caveats. I do support this legislation. I think that it would be a good move. I am grateful that Representative Rammers clarified that the division will remain intact. It's long been a point of mine that ARLF needs to remain a part of agriculture. I would also support, and I would like to see, if anybody of you guys wanted to make a motion to amend and include to move the inspections of meat, milk, and cheese back to agriculture from DEC, I would totally support that. DEC's role is regulatory. They have not been interested in sitting down to see how something can be done to incubate processing. They only say that it can't be done. Division of Ag has shown that it has that focus of working with producers to see how something can be properly done. One other thing that I would like to see, I agree with Mr. Huppert, that those lands, and this is one of the biggest concern I have with moving the Division of Ag, is what about the lands held by DNR? Will the ag lands held by DNR be held up for development in retaliation of a move? And I wouldn't put that past them. I would like to see those lands that have been designated as agriculture move with the Division of Ag. And a mandate given to them to put those into public or to private hands as quickly as possible. As long as the state owns those lands, they are not productive. They are not contributing to our economic stability nor to our independence. And I would like to see those move forward too.
Bryce, could I get you to wrap it up, please?
Yep. Tyson mentioned that something about. Farming or agriculture being a natural resource, land is a natural resource. However, agriculture is a business. I think that I don't even know what those acronyms are. Department of Economic Commerce and Economic Development is a logical place to move a business forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Richard Gaddis, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for your patience. Could you please state your name and affiliation for the record?
Yes, my name is Richard Gaddis. I have Gaddis Farms at Point McKenzie. I'd like to thank you for this opportunity. We've been in operation now 10 years at Point McKenzie. Last year we produced in the range of 600 tons of Timothy hay for livestock. We started basically with nothing, had to clear the land, and have been in this process for the last 10 years. I'm also a full-time airline captain, which to this point has allowed me to become a farmer and be a farmer, because without that income, I would not be able to afford being a farmer. And I'd like to state that I'm in favor of the change from DNR to DCCED. The status quo is not working well, and it hasn't worked since I've been farming. I think that there's aspects of the Department of Ag that have worked very well and some that haven't. RLF has worked well for us. It's allowed us to get loans that we probably otherwise couldn't have gotten in order to promote our farm. I think it's important that we establish as a state specific and defined goals for Alaska agriculture for domestic production as well as potential export production. One of the problems that I see is we have no economy of scale, and there's a lack of co-ops, and we're essentially family farmers like the lower 48 was 50, 60 years ago. So that along with the short growing season, you know, presents some specific problems for Alaska. I think we need to establish programs to help farmers with the fact that we have a remote location disadvantage for transporting of equipment, fertilizer, and supplies. It costs us a lot more to be farmers in Alaska. The real estate taxes, I think, could be changed to promote ag land retention. For example, in California, when I was a resident there, they had taxes on ag land based on the production value of the land versus the land value. So that if you had grazing land, you got taxed on maybe $100 or $200 a year, that value of whatever the land would produce, therefore making land retention more feasible. Today, with the cost of land, like at Point McKenzie and other places, when you have to spend $2,000 to $4,000 an acre for land, pay taxes on such, it makes it very difficult to have a profitable farm, a sustainable farm. I think that we could have low interest loans, incentives for good payment history, and ag expansion goals. There seems to be in the past, the squeaky wheel got the grease, and if you were going broke, you could get money for your farm, more so or better terms than you could if you were doing what you needed to be doing, and that's paying your bills on time and being a good citizen. The bottom line is when ag is run like a business with a reasonable expectation for profit and a return on your investment, then and only then will ag move forward and grow, in my view. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Lynn Gaddis, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Hi, my name is Lynn Gaddis with Gaddis Farms in Point McKenzie, and we're actively farming hay in Point McKenzie. As a lifelong Alaskan, I've been concerned that agriculture in the state of Alaska has been underutilized. I would like to know that the state has a plan for food for both people and animals in the case of a catastrophic emergency that possibly doesn't allow ships to bring those goods to Alaska. It has been my belief that agriculture should be run in a business-like fashion in which leadership and planning that allows Alaskans and farmers to know that direction. I also support the move of the Division of Ag from under DNR to be moved to DCCED. I believe Representative Ramirez is on the right track, keeping the budget and staffing intact and just moving it. I understand that there is a concern regarding this change, and sometimes change can create an opportunity for growth. So I thank you for giving us this opportunity for dialogue, and thank you for letting me comment on this subject.
Well, thank you for staying on with us so late in the afternoon. Robert Shoemaker, are you still with us?
Sir, yes, sir. Good afternoon. My name is Robert Shoemaker. I'm a valley farmer. I work each year with the local 4-H and the FFA programs. I appreciate Jeff Warner and Al Poindexter's comments. I have actually flown with the FFA state champions to their national convention for the last 4 years in Indianapolis. I think I've seen how there are three of them. I also help with, I also help them, you know, with their programs, and they have a state convention coming up, so I hope that all these people are there to help out with that. That'll be in Palmer. I work on approximately 300 acres of hay every summer. I have raised pigs in Alaska for 20 years. I milk dairy cows. I raise chickens. And besides that, you know, I do all kinds of farm stuff. This summer I will work a 3-acre garden. Last summer it was about 2.5. I will participate in 3 local markets, having 3 different booths. The Division of Agriculture has always helped me when I needed it. I am having trouble understanding why everybody keeps giving the division a black eye. The Department of Commerce markets and promotes tourism, an industry that is expected to decline. I'm not sure that's the department's fault, but it's coming. They are involved in promoting and marketing seafood, another industry that has been in trouble for years. What can the DCC do for agriculture? Agriculture is a natural resource, and I've heard some comments here. You have to distinguish between the two of them, between real estate and agriculture. Besides all this stuff, I'm a president of the Alaska Farmers Union, and our membership is somewhere in the 30 members at the moment. Our board is completely comprised of farmers. Maybe we're not the biggest organization in Alaska, but we have our priorities, or we try to. I just got my words here written down, so I want to make sure I'm going in the right direction. Some of the board's comments that I got, because I asked the boards, was one of them was that she felt we should chew on this idea for a while. It's new. One of them said that the bill doesn't look like a priority for anyone, but the rep that promoted it. And another one said that their gut reaction is to oppose. The biggest question is why the bill. Agricultural is still a renewable resource, and for it should stay under the Division of Natural Resources. Agriculture, this is about a value in resource extraction. It is renewable. We are not talking about real estate. I disagree with the statement that DNR focuses only on oil and gas. In fact, at our annual meeting, DNR gave a comprehensive presentation on ag lands, potential ag lands, and the overall status of lands in the state of Alaska. They are, it seemed to me, being in touch with agriculture. The problem is that for years, the state of Alaska has underfunded agriculture, or the Division of Agriculture. The revolving loan fund was it was my understanding that the revolving loan fund was paying the salaries of all the employees. What do you expect? It's not going to make money in the end. The legislature needs to fund the Division of Agriculture. I appreciate the ability of DCC to promote and market Alaskan products. There is too many ifs in this change. I feel this is the wrong move for the actual producers of agriculture products. I support building a 1-acre greenhouse in China. I support farming elk, but I support all kinds of other things. We have a lot of things going on in Alaska. I haven't heard from anyone that this move will keep the division intact. In fact, he said that he wasn't sure about the meat plant nor the plant material center, which are an intricate part of agriculture in Alaska. When the fair goes on in Kenai and those kids sell their animals, they have to put those animals in the trailer and haul them all the way up to the Palmer Valley here and have them slaughtered at the slaughter plant. If we didn't have that, or if it was disintegrated from the agriculture, we would probably be in some trouble. That's just on the 4-H level. Let me just see. I have a few more comments, and I'm done. The answer here, of course, you know, I think is not in moving the division into any department, but in funding it. So maybe we need to talk to DNR about how they treat the division and get that going. I appreciate your time, and I appreciate all the comments. I think they're some of them are very pointed and well made, and the distinction, of course, is natural resource development extraction as opposed to real estate, and it's how you look at agriculture, and that's the problem I see with most people in the state of Alaska. We are here to stay. We are trying to build an industry because there is an industry there. And some of this information, I think, that was provided is a little misleading. There may be 900,000 acres in agriculture, but I can guarantee you the biggest majority of that is in reindeer herding. And that's, to you, that may be farming, but most of us down here don't have a farm that big. Thank you very much, and have a good day.
Oh, and thank you. And is there anybody else online that would care to testify? And is there anybody in the room? I think with that, we'll close out public testimony and carry the bill over till Monday. So,
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're adjourned.